Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. A recently released film, Concussion, is based on the 2009 expose, Game Brain, written by Jean-Marie Laskus. The story focuses on concussions in professional football and their dire consequences. Our show today highlights concussive injuries that take place much earlier, however, and we'll be talking about youth athletics and concussions. We'll also hear about the impact programs that San Luis Sports Therapy has partnered with some local San Luis Obispo schools to provide in an effort to mitigate some of the long-term effects of concussive injuries. I'm joined today by Stacy Ritter, Director of Sports Medicine and Athletic Training at San Luis Sports Therapy, Casey Allison, who is a young soccer player who suffered a concussion, and Nancy Allison, who will talk about post-concussion syndrome from a parent's perspective, and also we'll be talking a lot more from all three of these ladies today. Our show is live, and we invite you to join our conversation with your comments and questions, and you can do that by calling us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875, and thank you all for joining me today. So, Stacy, I'm going to start with you, and when we talk about concussion, we know obviously something happening with the head, but can you give us a little bit more information about what we're really relaying to here?
Sure. The definition of concussion that I like to use most often is simply it's a brain injury. I think a lot of times historically people have thought of concussion as just getting their bell rung or maybe getting dinged. But what we know about concussion now is so vastly different than what we knew 10 or 15 years ago. And the best way I can describe it to people is if you think of the brain as a bowl of cooked spaghetti and you put that inside of a balloon and you tie a knot in the balloon and you turn it upside down and thread that knot down through a tube, then what you have is a soft structure that's tethered and inside of a hard case. And what happens with concussion is that soft structure bangs up against the inside of the hard case, and it creates this cascade of neurochemical reaction that is the resulting symptoms that the athlete or the person with a concussion is going to experience. So the symptoms can last anywhere from a few days to several weeks to several months, and it's such a nebulous kind of condition that is so important to manage properly because there is the potential for long-term consequences.
What kind of symptoms, you know, are evident in someone or not evident in someone who's had a concussion?
The most common symptoms are headache, dizziness, nausea, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to noise. Sometimes they feel a lack of focus, and sometimes that focus might be visual, and sometimes that focus might be cognitive. And those are the symptoms that I think are less known as far as being indicative of a head injury.
When you talk about cognitive, mm-hmm. what do you mean?
There's a well-documented, now effective concussion that we see in students in particular, but it can happen to anyone with concussion where there's a difficulty remembering, difficulty learning and retaining new information, difficulty calling up information they used to know really easily. Concentration is a real problem. The ability to look at a distance and then look close up again, reproducing their physical symptoms of headache and nausea is very common. And that ability to think clearly, concisely, and have an accurate memory is disrupted in the process of healing from a concussion.
Now, do those symptoms appear right away after the head trauma or that injury has occurred?
In adults, most of the time, the symptoms that person is going to experience are pretty immediate. What we've learned about youth concussion is that with kids, a lot of times we don't have a full spectrum of their symptoms until hours and sometimes even days after the initial injury. So whereas if I were to go hit my head on the wall right now and give myself a concussion, all of my symptoms are going to be pretty evident right away. But for instance, Casey, if she were to get another concussion, which hopefully she doesn't, you know, she might have a headache and feel kind of dizzy right now, but she may feel worse this evening and even more symptoms the following day.
Do all concussions, are they all associated with pain?
You know, most of the concussions that I have experience with do have a headache associated with them. However, there are some people where that headache resolves relatively quickly, and the symptoms that hang on for them tend to be more the nausea, the dizziness, the photosensitivity, and the sound problems with loud noises really being disruptive. And the cognitive symptoms also can hang on much longer than the physical symptoms can.
Now, is it harder to tell with younger children who are maybe less capable of communicating some symptoms that you've been describing?
At times it can be. They lack the knowledge that what they're experiencing is actually a symptom, but they also may lack the vocabulary to really describe what it is that they're experiencing. So if we ask someone, you know, did you feel dizzy? They might not really understand my definition of dizzy. Another word that is commonly associated with concussion is fatigue. However, many times when we've asked kids if they feel fatigue, they don't know what the word means. And so we have to say, well, do you feel kind of slowed down or kind of sleepy or like it's a good time for a nap? And then they can understand better what they're experiencing. But it can be difficult. Knowing their personality can also be difficult. Kids tend to be more emotional.
And when you're talking about the fatigue factor and some of the other symptoms, are you talking about those symptoms lingering after that game has occurred, or are you talking about those symptoms appearing relatively soon after the game?
That is a great example of why concussion is so difficult to manage, because it's different person to person to person. Some people, they may manifest all of their symptoms right away, and they all resolve relatively at the same time. Other people, it's a complete mystery as to when and how their symptoms are appearing and when they're going to resolve.
Because I would think that after a young athlete has played a rather rigorous game, they would be exhausted and maybe have a headache and feel spent, and some of the symptoms that you've got, without putting it together with having had some kind of a head jumble.
That's correct. And so it's really important that when we're talking to somebody about whether it's educating them on how to recognize it or trying to recognize it in an individual, knowing that mechanism is really important, because it really does include some type of a trauma to the head, some type of a blow. Maybe it's a whiplash type of a situation where, again, we think about that soft structure inside of a hard case. Any mechanism that forces that soft structure to slam up against the inside of the hard case could potentially cause those symptoms. If there's no mechanism, now it might be a different conversation.
So talk to me about what causes these concussions. What are some of the myths around it? Because I think when some people think of whether or not a child is at risk for a concussion, they think about athletics that are associated with direct contact with, for instance, football. Is that true?
I think one of the biggest myths regarding concussion is that you have to have had a loss of consciousness or blacked out in order to call it a concussion.
Yeah.
When actually only 10% of concussions result
10%.
So 9 out of 10 concussions, there is no loss of consciousness. And so I think a lot of people think, well, I got hit in the head and I feel a little dizzy and I have a headache.
But I never was out.
But it wasn't because I didn't get blacked out.
Right.
It's not a concussion. That's one of the biggest myths that we have to contend with. Another myth is that, well, as soon as you feel better, you can go and play. And that's also not entirely true. What we have learned is that sometimes if you exert somebody physically, their symptoms come back, which means the brain is still healing. Mm-hmm. If they're not able to do their classroom work without having symptoms come back, or their classroom performance is significantly impacted, even if they're not having headaches anymore, that's still an indication that the brain is still healing. So that cognitive piece is really important to consider too.
What happens if an athlete has had a concussion and then has another?
Well, there's two distinctly different scenarios. And one is if the previous concussion had completely healed and had been managed appropriately versus a second concussion if the first concussion had not fully and completely healed. If a concussion occurs and the proper steps are followed and it's medically managed in a way that the brain has had the opportunity to completely heal, then that person is able to return to sport. Again, everybody's different. Some people are more susceptible than others. However, if that person goes back into activity before their original concussion has completely healed, they're at risk for some really significant injuries and some catastrophic consequences.
So talk to me about what kinds of athletics for youth are at risk for concussions?
Well, in youth sports, the highest risk of concussion for boys is football, mm-hmm. but the highest risk of concussion for girls is soccer. And one of the challenges is that once football season is over, the conversation about concussion kind of gets quiet and people stop talking about it because, you know, they associate it with football.
Right.
But there's this whole group of girls, and Casey's a great example. There's a whole group of girls that are out there playing soccer, and some of them play year round. And the highest incident of concussion in girls is soccer, followed by basketball. And this is also basketball season.
Yeah.
And so to keep the conversation going after the football season is over and then is really important. And then also, you know, there's kids that ride skateboards mm-hmm. and there's kids that ride bikes.
Right.
And there's the most common cause of head injury in general from the CDC is falls. So mm-hmm. a simple fall mm-hmm. Can cause a concussion. So just anything that there's a likelihood of there being a blow to the head, we're going to be on the watch for concussion symptoms.
Okay, so I'm going to turn to you, Casey, because we've been talking about young people and concussions. So tell me a little bit about, you suffered a concussion.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about how that happened for you.
So it was in February of 2015, and it was like casual soccer game in PE. Ironically, I play both Condors. It was club, and I play for my high school. And I was probably about 10 feet away from the goal box, and someone drop kicked the ball to the back of my head. I did not black out. I'm part of the 9 out of 10 that don't. I just fell to the ground. I didn't immediately feel symptoms. I was nauseous, and I had trouble memory. But other than that, it took about maybe like a day or two to really feel like all of the symptoms that I, like fatigue and headaches and all of that.
Did you think that something was wrong?
Yes, and my PE teacher, like, she saw it in my eyes. She knew something was wrong, so she called out our medical trainer, and he came out and tested me, and he saw flags of concussion.
Was that ball kicked hard, really hard at your head, or did it feel like you've been kicked maybe with a ball that speed? And
I think it was pretty hard. It's kind of hard to remember. I kind of blocked out the whole day, but I think it was pretty hard. I was probably like 5 to 10 feet away from where it got drop kicked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And Casey, as a mom of a young lady who's playing soccer, were you concerned when you signed her up for soccer that this would be part of the thing that you needed to be alert to?
Well, I was surprised it happened in PE, you know, when she had been playing soccer year round for, you know, 6 or 7 years before that. She had had a lot of headers. She had headed the ball frequently, and she was a goalie for about the last 8 months. So, and frequently she would head the ball and have a bloody nose. And so we had a lot of incidents of that when she was younger. So I was surprised that it happened in PE. It just was a fluke accident, you know, and I think she got hit very hard with the ball, you know, because it was a boy who's a very good soccer player, and he was trying to kick it over her into the goal. So, and they brought a wheelchair over because she was so dizzy she couldn't walk. So.
And so that people understand, when mom talks, Casey, about you doing a lot of headers, that's where you're actually blocking and moving the ball with your head.
Yeah, and recently I think they've been like monitoring it more, where they're like trying to tell you not to, but it just like happens. Like sometimes it's an accident, you get hit in the head with the ball, but it's just part of soccer.
It's part of how you play the
game.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's really interesting is just in November, the United States Soccer Federation came out with some rules banning headers from youth soccer. And in their organization, for programs that they oversee, they have banned heading in teams where the kids are 10 years and under. And for teams where the kids are age 12 to 13, they've limited the heading. But what's really interesting is in other youth soccer organizations that they don't oversee, the under 11 level and younger, there's no heading. But in the under 12 and under 13, they allow heading in practice, but they limit the maximum to 30 minutes per week and no more than 15 to 20 headers per player per week. But what's interesting about that is the concussion rate is much higher in games than in practice, and they have not limited
headers in games
at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there's some challenges with that. Who's going to enforce it? Who's going to educate about it? And these ages that they've chosen are kind of arbitrary. There really is no evidence to support why these particular ages are significant.
Interesting. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Radio, and we're talking today about concussions in youth and how that impacts not only their play, but what's happening in the games today, and whether or not it's something to be concerned about. If you have any questions or comments about today's topic, you can call us today at 781-3875. We'd love to hear from you and love to answer your questions. Casey, when you had your incident on the field, had you felt different at that time than you felt in other games?
You mean before the incident? Mm-hmm. Not really. I mean, I was kind of on like a high, I would say. I just scored a goal with a friend, so it was very unexpected. But other than that, I wouldn't say I felt very different before it happened.
How about when you were going, did you go to the hospital?
Went to your doctor's. Okay, yeah. I didn't go to the hospital. About maybe 4 hours after, I went to my pediatrician, and he saw obvious signs of symptoms of concussion, so he was the first to diagnose me with concussion.
And Stacey, what are the obvious signs that someone would look for? For instance, athletic trainers or a doctor on the field. Casey had mentioned they looked at her eyes.
Right. So we're going to look for, obviously, if there was a mechanism that created a blow to the head. And then combined with that, is there headache? Is there dizzy? Is there sensitivity to light? Is there sensitivity to noise? Are their pupils equal and reactive?
Mm-hmm.
That's indication of a more serious head injury. And so that would be something that would be handled much differently than
mm-hmm.
a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
If the kids are acting confused, if they're disoriented, if they're not able to answer questions correctly. And also the quality of the way they give the answer. For instance, I had an athlete once who slipped on a gym floor and hit his head. And so I went over to evaluate him, and I said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Dylan." And I said,
with
"Okay,
a question mark.
It shouldn't have taken that long,
yeah.
And there shouldn't be a question mark at the end." So even though he gave the correct answer,
yeah.
It's the quality of the answer and that we're also looking for. And previous history of concussion is also an important factor to consider, because we know now that kids who have had a previous concussion are more susceptible to subsequent concussions later on, and oftentimes with even less force than the original.
How old were you, Casey, when you started playing soccer?
I was 6. I started in AYSO, and then when I was about 12, I believe, I started club soccer.
And Nancy, did you notice Casey acting any differently?
After the concussion?
Yes.
She came home and was in a dark room for several days, really not able to stand up and go to the bathroom without being dizzy.
And you were real light sensitive?
Yes.
And noise sensitive. So it was very noticeable, you know, pretty extreme symptoms right after. And she didn't go to school for at least a week. It might have been a week and a half before she went back to school, and then wasn't able to stay at school. She was overstimulated, head started pounding, and so then she ended up not going back to school for the rest of that year, being out for 4 months, so until the school year was out. So.
You were out for 4 months?
Yeah. Yes.
And it took how long for you to recover, or are you still recovering?
I would say I'm still recovering. I still have headaches every day. I just don't think they're as close to as severe as they were. And I still suffer from, like, lights, I mean, I wouldn't say light sensitivity, noise. Like if I'm at school and there's like too much commotion, I try to leave before it like creates a worse headache. But yeah, I'd say I'm still dealing with it.
And that's very different than you had before. The activity at school never really bothered you, or you really never noticed it before.
Yeah.
And the headaches, you didn't have the headaches before.
I mean, I would have them on rare occasion, but it was just if I didn't eat enough or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had you ever had a concussion before?
No, not that I believe.
Not that you know.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think so.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about treatment for situations like Casey's. Stacey, what do you do?
Well, in most cases, concussions are going to resolve just fine on their own with rest and some monitored, graduated exertion within 3 weeks. 90% of concussions have healed. However, there is a percentage of individuals who will continue to have symptoms beyond that point, and they just seem to plateau and they can't seem to move beyond those symptoms. And at that point, we now need to see a neurologist and get some more extensive testing done, really isolate what is triggering the symptoms, and then they can target the treatment.
Okay. And we have a call from Mary we're going to take right now. Mary, are you there?
I am here.
Hello. Did you have a question or a comment?
Hi, Casey, and hi, Allison. It's Mary, your Grover Beach neighbor.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, guys. Casey, honey, first I should probably introduce myself. I'm a 5 times head injured person, and I had to learn how to walk and talk all over again. And when I first had my first head injury, I was 16 years old. Second one was when I was 21 and later on into my 20s. And during that time, they just didn't really know enough.
Were you an athlete?
Excuse me?
Were you an athlete?
I was.
Okay.
The first head injury, I was on the Junior Olympic ski team.
Okay.
I was shadowing the course. And prior to in a competition, a lady came in, and I don't remember too darn much after that.
Yeah.
I went down the mountain in a basket, and when I got to the hospital, they asked me what my name was. I think I gave them my name, but I did not give the correct answer for my father. I said that my Uncle Jack was my father. but luckily, Uncle Jack was head of anesthesiology at University of Iowa, so they got a hold of him.
Did all of those occur because of your athletics?
Well, kind of yes and no. Two of them definitely were.
Okay.
The ski accident, then the second one, I was riding a bicycle and got hit by a car and did an aerial 2.5 flip backwards. The next one, jeepers, I was in a car, legally stopped at a light, and a semi came by and hit me from behind and did a 3-point turn, and that was fascinating.
Mary, have you had long-term effects from your head injuries?
I have.
And things like memory?
Yep. Uh-huh. I deal daily with sometimes short-term memory stuff.
Uh-huh.
A lot of long-term memory is gone, and I rely on others to help me fill in the blanks and you know, what was I like? What did I do?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll get pieces back, and it's awesome. And I'm just so thankful that, you know, I get those kind of memories. Other times, I'm affectionately known for rereading all my books, re-seeing movies.
Uh-huh. And they're all new to you,
With new pleasure.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I don't even realize that I've even read those books or seen those movies.
Mary, are you happy that they're starting to put more attention to head injuries in kids now?
I very much am.
Great.
Very, very much. And Casey, you're adorable. You're awesome. And Allison, I think you're wonderful for, you know, supporting your daughter and bringing a voice to all of this. I think it is definitely something that needs to come to the forefront. And education and awareness needs to be made.
Great. Thank you for calling in and sharing, Mary.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. You take care.
Bye, Mary.
Bye, Mary.
Okay, and we have Lori. Lori, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Did you have a question or a comment?
I had a question for either Casey or Nancy. I was wondering what advice they would give to families dealing with this issue to help them navigate the whole situation in the best possible way, with in terms of dealing with maybe with school or with coaches or with friends, just to kind of ease the path for other folks.
Well, personally, I have been asking for a golden retriever for about 10 years every Christmas, and I worked my way into getting one during my concussion. Her name's Addie, and she has actually helped a lot. I like to call her my sympathy dog, but she has brought a lot of joy. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for everyone if it wasn't the right situation, but it definitely helped me.
Besides playing the sympathy card, yeah. Do you have another answer to that question?
I mean, good parents. My parents were awesome and got me all the help I needed, but good friends, too. I had some awesome friends who, like, stuck by me and helped me all the time, which was awesome. And
I think I'll just add to that, you know, it's scary. And, you know, I was thankful that, you know, I know Stacy Ritter, who's here today, who helped us tremendously, you know, kind of guide. But, it, you know, I did a lot of reading and research online. And I think it's tough at the age group that Casey's in, because everything is, you know, texting and the social circle, and she couldn't really read and couldn't focus. So, you know, so I think it's important for, you know, for teenagers to kind of try to understand, and her friends did, that, you know, she really wasn't able to do things that she used to be able to do. And yet they'd come over and see her, and she looked okay, but, you know, it's just hard, really kind of hard for them to understand the brain injury and how, you know, how that works. So anyway, we were thankful that she's just doing so much better.
That answer your question, Lori?
Yeah, thanks very much. All right. And good luck to both of you, Casey and Nancy.
Thank you.
So when we're talking, you know, hearing the magnitude, I mean, just like in a second to be at a non-competitive game and doing something you've done since you were six, and you're how old now?
15.
You're 15 now. Mm-hmm. And then boom, literally boom.
Yeah.
And what a life shift.
Yeah.
Right? Who would have thought?
You know, there's another factor, another side of the healing, and Lori's question does actually address it a little bit, in that, you know, when you have an injured shoulder and you're wearing a sling, people can see that.
They see it.
And if you're on crutches and you have an injury to your knee or
Absolutely.
Ankle, people can see that. But when you have a brain injury, there's no way by looking at someone you can tell that their brain isn't working the right way.
Right.
And it can be very isolating. Depression and anxiety are true symptoms of concussion. And actually, those that have experienced concussion at a young age, there is some research that supports that they are more susceptible to having depression and anxiety later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
Because depression and anxiety is a chemical imbalance. And concussion is a neurochemical cascade that occurs as a result of trauma. And so sometimes there can be personality differences.
Yeah.
There's a case that I use in my educational seminars that I speak of a lot. And it was a 16-year-old girl who had multiple concussions. And by the time she was 16 and healing from her seventh or eighth concussion, she had isolated herself from her friends entirely. And for a teenage girl to not want to spend time with their friends, that was a big deal. And when asked why, she said she was afraid they were going to make her laugh. And they said, well, why would you be afraid of that? And she says, because laughing hurts my head.
Oh, wow.
And so if her friends know that, they don't know how to be around their friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, teenagers, that peer group is so important. But understanding there's a huge benefit to support, and even the dog Addie, if it helps with depression,
absolutely,
if it helps with socialization, if it helps to bring someone out of that dark room, it's going to help.
Yeah, it's not the way to get the dog.
No.
But yeah, but we're glad you got Addie.
We'll call her a service dog.
Yeah, a service dog. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio at 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas to Paso Robles, 95.1 Lompoc, 90.9 Santa Ynez, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org. If you just joined us, my guests are Stacy Ritter, Director of Sports Medicine and Athletic Training at San Luis Sports Therapy, Casey Allison, who's a young soccer player who suffered a concussion and is here to talk to us today about that and share her story, and Nancy Allison, her mom, who's talking about some of the post-concussion syndrome from a parent's perspective. This is a great time to call in and ask your questions of today's guests or make a comment about the topic today. You can reach us at 781-3875 and join our conversation. And we have another call from Keith. And Keith, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, did
How
you
are
have
you
a
doing?
Yeah, do you have a comment or question?
I have a question about the long-term prognosis of a concussion when it takes a long time to recover. My son was injured playing soccer. He was one of these guys who could kick the ball 50 meters at the time, and he was about 20. And another guy, and he kicked the ball at once, and the ball went right up and broke his nose and knocked him unconscious. His friend said after that that his personality was completely different, and it took him several years to recover, and he's 23 now. I'm not sure he's fully recovered yet.
It's very different from person to person, which is also one of the challenges in trying to manage concussion, is we're never sure who's going to respond in which way and who's going to take longer to heal than somebody else. Some of the things that we have learned from research and our evidence-based practice is that there are certain predispositions that will create a situation for an individual that may make them either more susceptible or have a longer recovery or a less complete recovery. Some of those things include a family history of migraine, if there is a history of learning disability or attention deficit, if there is history of previous concussions is a huge predictor of protracted recovery. And there are also some other factors. They're actually doing quite a bit of research right now on, is there a gene that some people have and other people don't that predispose them or make them more susceptible to concussion? Mm-hmm. So those are just a sample of some of the individual factors that will really make that recovery even more more challenging to try to manage correctly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. We don't know most of those things because we adopted it.
Yeah, and that's tough. If you don't have that history, that can be a challenge. But, you know, having help from a neuropsychologist has proven to be very effective. Neurology has been proven to be very effective. And they're actually doing more and more with pharmacological interventions for post-concussion syndrome. And that can also sometimes help with someone's recovery in the long term.
Great. Thank you very
much. Good luck, Keith.
Thank you.
Okay. And we have a call here from Jerry. We'll go ahead and take that, too. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. You had a question or comment?
Well, I have a comment, and you can ask me questions if you like. I can give you firsthand experience. I had my concussion either October 11th or 12th. I still can't remember. In 1994, I had what the doctors diagnosed as the contra coup, head trauma. It was inoperable. There was no reason to operate because there were just little fissures in the front of my brain and little fissures in the back of my brain, and they weren't sure if they would. The synapse, I believe, would correctly realign, and most of them have. I was in therapy at Solutions for 3 years. I was in residence there.
Did
I'm walking and talking and shopping now and trying to live a good life. I still suffer from depression.
And how did you get your head injury, Jerry?
I was working on the designer outlet mall in Solvang, and I was checking the work at the base of the building, and the roofers dumped a tub of roofing tiles over the side, and it happened to hit me.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. And so okay. This wasn't a sports injury, right? You had a head injury, but it wasn't sports related.
No, okay. I've been knocked out before. But, okay. This was the one that put me away.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It was 7.5 months of in and out of a coma.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that. And today what we're talking about is we're talking about sports injuries. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the show back to Stacy and have her talk about some more sports injuries. And if you can listen to us, it probably will answer your questions. But thank you for calling.
I think what Jerry's describing is probably more of a significant head injury than the youth sports concussions that we see on a regular basis. And, you know, he is able to explain that it can really have some long-term consequences, you know, in just activities of daily living. And so that's why it's really important for our team of athletic trainers that currently work at all of the high schools to really make sure that we're recognizing immediately, removing them from play immediately, putting them through an initial evaluation and getting them to the doctor. So if they are diagnosed with a concussion, then they can be taken through that the required concussion management protocol that all of our local schools that San Luis Sports Therapy works with have all adopted as a way of helping kids play as safely as they can. And if they do get injured, recover as best they can.
When somebody has or is it susceptible to a concussion, now in Casey's case, she was hit with a ball. But my understanding is it's not just being hit with something. A person can suffer a concussion in athletics, not necessarily by hitting their head.
No, not at all. And in fact, what's really interesting is that in the sport of soccer in particular, at all levels of soccer, the leading mechanism of injury is person-to-person contact.
Explain that.
So maybe it's clunking heads together.
Maybe.
But maybe they're both going up for a header, or maybe it's a collision person to person. And if there's enough of a jostling of the brain where, again, remember that bag full of cooked spaghetti bangs up against the inside of its shell, anything that creates that jarring force has the potential to be a mechanism. Mm-hmm. In youth, there was a youth hockey study that was done not too long ago, and what they found for kids was that a rotational force is actually more injurious than a linear force.
Explain that.
So a linear force would be the equivalent of maybe being rear-ended and having your head snap forward and back, whereas a rotational force would be the equivalent of looking over your shoulder and then being hit from the blind side. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that rotational force, because remember when we talked about our balloon and how it's tethered, what we've now done is we've twisted that balloon on its tether. Mm-hmm. And for kids, it seems to be much more disruptive and more injurious than the linear force is. Mm-hmm. So it can just be a blindside hit, you know, and if there was any kind of a whiplash type of a mechanism, sometimes you'll see people fall to the ground. They don't actually hit their head on the ground, but just the act of their head kind of jostling back and forth can be enough to cause a concussion. Not in everybody, but in some people.
So when it is suspected that there may be, I mean, are coaches and parents alert now generally in athletics that it's not just a hitting of the head, but there are other kinds of injuries, and are they aware of what to look for?
We've got San Luis Sports Therapy has contracted with 9 local high schools to make sure that there's a certified athletic trainer on campus every day through the school year for all of the athletes all year long.
Girls and boys.
Girls and boys, varsity to freshman, football to cross country. Any athlete, any injury, any illness, there is someone who is appropriately medically trained available to them to provide necessary care.
At what age levels?
This is at the high schools.
At the high school.
Correct.
What about junior high?
At junior high, there has not been a request or an articulated need for that service. In some states, they do combine junior high and high school for that kind of care, but they have a much larger staff in order to handle mm-hmm. that volume of athletes. Mm-hmm. But what our athletic trainers do at each of our high schools is they do preseason concussion education for the coaches as well as the parents. Okay. Now, whether that's retained once the season begins and emotions get high and they're looking at a win-loss record is another matter, but we do provide that education. We also provide resources on the websites of each of the high school athletic departments, which are really helpful. But we do emphasize recognition and we do emphasize reporting. So if a kid suspects that he or she may have a concussion, that they speak up about it right away. And it doesn't mean just because they mention it or they're automatically being diagnosed as, yes, you definitely have one. They'll go through an evaluation process. And then if the necessary steps are needed, then they'll be put on that path. Recognition and reporting are two very, very important pieces of the puzzle.
What about, you know, when Casey was talking about starting soccer at age 6, okay, so you did not get to high school, obviously, for quite a few years when you were playing soccer. What about those children? Because a number of people have children that are involved in athletics way before they get to the high schools that are contracted with you. So what efforts are being made to educate them, or are they educated?
It would be up to each organization, whether it's a soccer organization or whether it's a youth football league or whether it's a youth basketball league. It would be up to that organization to really prioritize that education for not only their coaches, but also for their parents and provide those resources. And again, the younger the kids get, they're not necessarily going to know to articulate that they feel dizzy
right.
after they hit their head.
Right.
And so having adults around that can recognize that the behavior or the activity of that child is irregular enough that they go and ask that child questions is where it becomes very important.
You know, I'm thinking in soccer too, especially for smaller children, their heads are bigger than their bodies can carry. So, you know, they're often kind of leading with their heads.
That is a very real phenomenon as related to head injury. The ratio of head yeah. size to body size, and even more important than that, is the strength of the neck muscles to mm-hmm. support the mm-hmm. weight of that head. And when we go back to that rotational force, those little spindly neck muscles yeah. are not necessarily as strong as they need to be in order to slow down the head movement that's going to create the sloshing of the brain inside. And so you've got a big head on a weak neck, on a body that's moving
as fast as
their little legs
yeah.
can carry them.
Yeah.
And that's where we really need to be more careful. And you can even take it a step further now. Picture a helmet on top of that
right.
oversized head with that tiny neck. And now you can start to see where we're identifying some areas that we might need to look into a
little
bit more.
Well, I look at kids who are playing peewee football, for example, and they look like the comedy of the helmet with the little feet under it. And you just think this is ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Casey or Nancy, for you, when Casey started playing soccer, were you as a parent educated about what to look for if there were any kind of concussive injuries, or were you aware of that? Did you think about that?
I don't think that that I was educated on that, but I think Casey was fortunate to have good coaches who cared a lot about the safety mm-hmm. of the athletes. So like when she was heading and she'd get a bloody nose, she would sit out, and if it was in tournaments, they would have EMTs come over and look at them. So yeah, I mean, I think I think that we've got sort of an education about that, and I don't think that there was ever anything obvious where she had a prior concussion, but it is possible that she had one and we just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. And do you have, based on what you said, you've done a lot of research now since Casey's had her injury, and what, if you could go back or mm-hmm. if you could mm-hmm. give advice mm-hmm. to parents with children in athletics now, Do you have anything that you would kind of push forward on that?
I would just say, you know, if they don't have a coach that cares about the well-being above winning, to be the advocate, you know, so if your child does look like they're jostled with their brain, you know, out there, then insist that they don't go back in that game and take them to a doctor. And in Casey's case, she just had a whole lot of other symptoms that came up, like inability to sleep, and, you know, she had terrible whiplash. And so it was just kind of like going down this path of, and, you know, you get some symptoms, you go to one doctor, then you keep going. And, you know, so it was definitely a journey that was always changing. And, you know,
this what you're talking about, symptoms after the most recent injury.
Yes, after when she had the concussion.
And not writing those off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Being an advocate, you know, is crucial.
Okay. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX, the Central Coast Public Radio from Salinas to Ventura. If you're just joining us and want to hear today's entire show, you can do so by logging on to the KCBX website at www.kcbx.org during the week. Or during the next week, actually, starting tomorrow, you can hear this show in its entirety. You can also hear our former shows at your convenience. The voices you're listening to with me today are Stacy Ritter, Director of Sports Medicine and Athletic Training at San Luis Sports Therapy, Casey Allison, who's a young woman who's been a soccer player since she was six and suffered a concussion, one of the things that we've talked about today, and Nancy Allison, her mom. And we have about 15 minutes left today, probably time for one or two more calls. If you have a comment or a question about today's topic, you can still reach us at 781-3875. That's 781-3875. And Stacy, I want to go back to you because we've talked about injuries that come from more contacty kind of sports, but concussive injuries are not, you know, head injuries are not limited to sports like football or boxing, or, you know, so I mean, when I was doing a little bit of research for today's show, I was reading articles about the increase in concussions for girls that are involved and boys that are involved in cheerleading. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cheerleading is now considered a sport by the CIF, which is the California Interscholastic mm-hmm. Federation, and that's the governing body for all high school sports in California. And it has now been designated as a sport, and it's got a very high rate of catastrophic injury, and especially in terms of the stunt teams and the flyers, the people that are being thrown, and then the people that have to catch people.
You know, and that was interesting because I was reading about as many people getting hit as they were trying to catch people that were coming down and getting clobbered.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, what kind of surface are they stunting on? Are they stunting on grass? Are they stunting on the track next to the football field? Are they stunting on thick padding that can help absorb some of that fall? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen concussions in pretty much every sport. We had a concussion in a swimmer who was doing backstroke and missed the wall, you know, when he was counting his strokes to touch the wall and miscounted and swam right backwards head first into the wall, and that created a concussion.
I've actually done that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's really no sport that we exclude from the possibility. And again, if we simplify it as much as possible, if there is a mechanism of sloshing that brain inside the skull, the brain doesn't know what caused the sloshing. All it knows is that it was sloshed.
It was sloshed,
and
right.
So that's really, if we, you know, kind of remember that part of it, then we can take the you know, finger pointing, this sport is worse than that sport and this sport is better than that sport. As long as the brain's getting sloshed inside the head, there's a risk for concussion.
So the protective wear, the gear that, you know, the helmeting that people keep trying to create better and better, do they prevent these?
Well, excuse me, unless or until they can come up with something that you can put on the outside of that hard case that mitigates movement on the inside of that hard case, we're not going to be able to have a helmet that does what a lot of them want to help us believe they do, which right. is prevent concussion. There is no helmet on the market that is supported with any evidence whatsoever that prevents concussion.
So now, essentially what you're doing is you're preventing like a head fracture.
We're preventing lots of serious injuries with right. helmets, absolutely. Right. But concussion, because it's again, we can't tether that brain inside there mm-hmm. with something on the outside of the skull. And that's the challenge. I mean, parents and coaches want their kids to play protected sure. and they want to be able, the kids want to be able to go full speed and play without fear. And so having gear on gives you that sense of security. But again, it's that floaty, soft, tethered thing that's going for a ride inside the skull that is really, how do we do that? There's a really interesting study done with big horn sheep. And when they butt heads, why do they not get concussed? And right. why do woodpeckers not get concussed? Right. And they're looking at the anatomy. Well, how come these animals don't seem to have this problem? It's actually cited in that movie, Concussion. I had read those studies before and it was really interesting. And part of it is the blood flow to the head, and the blood flow increases. So it creates almost like an extra buffering or cushion system inside the skull. And so the brain doesn't slosh. So those are some really interesting things that they're looking into. I mean, the research is coming fast and hard. You know, if there are people that we can predict, can we prevent or protect them better? If there's, is there a helmet that will do that? Not yet. Is there a mouth guard that will do it? Not yet. It's a good marketing tool, but is it truly effective? The evidence does not support that at this time.
Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, it seems like for Casey, she had, you know, she got hit hard, but there doesn't seem to be any way of evaluating, gee, you were hit on a scale of 1 to 10 at 7. So you're going to have this magnitude of symptoms, which Casey's symptoms are pretty big for you. They've been very altering, right, for yes. your life.
Well, and they've done studies, and there are helmet sensors that measure force.
Uh-huh.
And they've tried to identify, well, at what threshold
right.
is it too much force right. for a human head, a
have
child's head?
Have they been able to do that?
The problem is because every person is different. You can have two people receive the exact same force
mm-hmm.
as measured on a monitor,
right.
but one person ends up with a concussion and the other person doesn't.
So,
yeah. I mean, it's a step. I mean, they can set a threshold that says, okay, this person got a very strong G-force hit.
Right.
Let's go check them out.
Right.
And then it's a good way to help identify those that may need to be evaluated.
But it really sounds like the true monitor is being able to check in with the individual and look at what the symptoms are and whether or not they're having any alterations.
Yeah, it's awareness of those symptoms, mm-hmm. An appreciation for how serious it can be if one chooses to continue to participate with those symptoms, and really being honest enough to speak up and tell somebody, hey, I'd like to get checked out because I hit my head pretty hard and I don't feel good.
Yeah, let's take a call here real quick from Sylvia. Sylvia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
I'd like to make a comment about the injuries that are possible for children in athletics. And I know athletics are extremely important in our country, but parents who put their little children into these things knowing that there's a possibility for them to be hurt seems unusual. It must be that they don't really understand the possibility of injury and maybe long-time injury. Can't they participate in something that isn't so so physically bad for them, so that they could compete and they could run and play, but not have the possibility of this kind of thing? And instead of looking to see if they've been injured and getting really good care after they're injured, just preventing it entirely by not playing that kind of thing. I know this is not a popular idea, but it does seem sensible. I wouldn't want my children to participate in something in which I thought there was an injury to their brain. Thank you.
Thanks, Sylvia.
You know, it's a question that's being asked by a lot of people across the country. You know, is our sport safe? Is football safe? Should my kid play? And it's a very individual decision by those parents based on their own criteria for the risk versus reward that their child may be exposed to. there's a gentleman named Kevin Guskowitz who is the leading researcher on youth sports concussion, and he received the MacArthur Fellow Genius Award several years ago. He has three sons. They all play football. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's asked about that all the time. And he says, make sure their equipment is well conditioned, make sure their coaches are well trained, well prepared, make sure there's appropriate accessible medical care available that is unbiased and is willing to make those hard decisions in the event of an injury, prevent as much as you can. But then you get into any activity. Kids can get hurt on the playground. Kids can get hurt riding their bike. Adults can get head injuries, falling off the ladder, taking down their Christmas lights. There's a risk of injury by being, you know, vertical human beings in a horizontal world. And so, again, it's a risk versus reward decision that's very personal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually have a brother-in-law who had a severe concussion as a result of bonking his head getting into his car in the driver's side and did not know it and ended up with double vision and not being able to drive for a couple of months. So, yeah, but I'm going to turn to you, Nancy, because I think as a parent of a child who suffered a concussion, I know you've gone through these kind of questions in your mind. How would you answer that question?
Well, I think Sylvia raises a good point, and I think it is an individual decision. And we were, once Casey had her bad concussion, she never did go back to soccer. Mm-hmm. So she switched over to tennis, where it's harder to get, you know, hit, have a bad head injury. And we were sad, but we were relieved, you know, because we had been through this experience. But I think with her starting so young, we never really saw soccer as, you know, something that, you know, would be, you know, would impact her health in the way that it did. And it was, you know, it was in PE class. It wasn't on, you know, the soccer field, playing in her club, you know, game. But I agree with what Stacy said. I mean, there's a risk in being alive, you know. And when your child loves a sport, you know, she loves soccer from the time she was very little. We didn't want to deprive her of that, you know, for our fears. So that was a choice we made.
And Stacy, we have just a real quick minute or two to wrap up. I want to turn back to you. Impact.
Right. The impact testing system that our 9 high schools in the area use is a partnership between San Luis Sports Therapy and Sierra Vista. And it's a neurocognitive testing system. And all of our athletes at all of our high schools for the major impact sports will do a baseline neurocognitive test. It's a computer-based test. And in the event they do experience a head injury, then they can go and take that test again. And their post-injury results are compared to their baseline results. And it will help us identify some of those cognitive symptoms that otherwise would be harder to detect, and that will also help us manage them not only on the playing field but also in the classroom.
And if parents, you know, or parents, friends, whoever, the things to watch out for athletes or someone that may have a concussion again, quickly, what would they look for?
You know, what we know in the research states that if someone has already had a concussion, that the subsequent concussions tend to have very, very similar symptoms that individual had before. Now, it may differ between individuals, but within that one person, their symptoms will be very similar to their prior concussion. The most important thing to know is there is a state law on the books that says you must be removed from play, you must have a doctor's note, you must participate in a graduated return to play protocol of no less than 7 days, and our program also includes the impact. They also must be cognitive symptom free before they can return to activity with a doctor's note.
Okay. I really want to thank my guest today, Stacy Ritter, Director of Sports Medicine and Athletic Training at San Luis Sports Therapy, Casey and Nancy Allison, for joining us today and talking about it from a personal perspective, and everyone who called in with comments and questions. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. Please join your host, Fred Monroe, next week when he will be talking about cybersecurity in a tech-heavy world. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices. Thank you.